All right, Linda.
Okay. I hereby call to order this regular meeting of the DESDDD District Central Independent Oversight Committee. Today's date is May 22nd, 2023, and the time is 10:07 a.m. This is a regular meeting of the Independent Oversight Committee. It is being held electronically. This meeting is being recorded, and the transcript of that recording will be posted on the ADOA IOC website. In an effort to avoid excess background noise and potential microphone feedback, please mute your microphone when you're not speaking. The host of the meeting can mute you, but then you can unmute yourself when you would like to speak. You can mute yourself by clicking on the microphone icon at the bottom left corner of your screen or elsewhere, depending on the platform. Additionally, I have been asked to read the following statement. Do we have anyone that has to disclose a conflict of interest? If there is, the committee member needs to disclose why. All right, if there are no disclosures, we will now have the introductions. My name is Linda Meekum. I am the chair of the Independent Oversight Committee. And Debbie? Debbie, you're on mute. We'll go to Mandy. You're on mute, Mandy, there. Okay.
Mandy Harmon, IOC member.
We're glad you're out of the hospital, Mandy. Good job.
Hello, am I unmuted now?
Yeah.
You're unmuted. Go ahead, Debbie.
Give me that picture. Okay, I'm unmuted. Debbie Stapley, vice chair.
Carolyn? You're muted.
Sorry, Carolyn Wilmer, member.
Eva?
Eva Hammond, which is labeled as woman study.
Thank you, Eva. Eduarda?
Eduarda Yates, and my son is in Campbell ICF, state operated.
Okay. I would also like to introduce Jack and Stephanie Schwartz. I met them at their son's PRC and invited them to come to our meeting today. Would you two like to say a couple words?
Yeah, hi. I appreciate this team getting together. My name is Jack. I, together with his mother, Stephanie, we are co-guardians of Jackson. I appreciate you guys. This looks like a pretty powerful team here. Never been in such a big meeting, actually. So thank you.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
Let's see. Go ahead, Jeffrey, if you want to introduce. Can you take that out of the recording? I inadvertently said their last name. I'm so sorry.
I will be unable to take it off the recording. I will take it off the transcript.
Okay, thank you. Sorry, Jack.
Let's go ahead with Leah.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Leah Gibbs, the administrator of the Office of Individual and Family Affairs with DDD.
Barb?
Good morning, everyone. My name is Barb Piccone, and as it relates to this meeting, I support our IOC liaisons as well as our volunteer coordinator, Liz Perez.
ADA, got that.
Joan? You're on mute.
And I was on mute. Sorry about that. Hi, everyone. I'm Joan McQuaid. I'm a manager with the Office of Individual and Family Affairs, and I support Jeffrey and Michelle.
Michelle?
Hi, good morning. My name is Michelle Rademacher. I'm the DDD IOC liaison for districts North, South, and West.
I will go next. I'm Jeffrey Yamamoto. I'm the DDD IOC liaison for District Central and District East. Let's go to Liz.
Hi, good morning. Liz Perez, DDD Volunteer Coordinator.
Thank you, Liz. James?
James Mayo, Quality Assurance Manager for District Central.
Thank you. Mary?
Good morning. Sorry, my computer has a lag this morning, but Mary DiCarlo, I'm a licensed behavior analyst and I work in the DDD Behavioral Health Administration. I did hear Patricia's on annual leave today, so she won't be here, but I'll have I'll be available for any questions related to PRC. Thanks.
Thank you. Larry?
Good morning, Larry Allen, IOC State Liaison at ADOA.
Thank you. Laurie?
Hi there, good morning. This is Laurie Gansmiller. I'm Director of Special Programs with United Healthcare Community Plan.
Thank you, Laurie. Do we have anybody else that I have missed that's on this call? All right, Linda.
We'll now have a call to the public. Do we have anyone from the public who is attending?
Yes, my name is Mr. Delgado, Prescott North. I serve as ADA compliance consultant to parent support me. Thank you.
Okay. Is there anything that you would like to say, sir? This is our call to the public. If you have something to say, we have a limited time of 3 minutes.
Okay. My public input, want me to say something now?
Well, if you're going to say anything, then this is the time. So, yes.
Okay. I'll be real brief. Working with a lot of parent support and other areas of advocacy, I just want to mention, I mentioned it before, but I want to mention it again. We're closing out the, getting out the closing, going into the summer. My concern, along with others who make information on campsite services, and I'm talking about the one in Santa Cruz, Arizona. I made an inquiry what the cost might be. It's very high, close to about $2,000 per person. The average about $4,500 throughout the season. And it's very high. They come into various parks, other parts of the states, related states in Arizona. I'm just saying it's awful high, and it should be. I made inquiry. There's about two or three of our area that you have to call and see. Many of them are from churches and religious organizations. That's fine for that. But the other two could be available for anybody who wants to make an appointment and so forth. But the one that said it can, but because of the high cost, the negotiation between GD and Santa Cruz, they cut back on some of the GD clients, the ones on behavior, I guess, and that included residential and daycare, no, residential and ADA homes and community care service. Those in the other areas, like programs, day programs, and other areas, they're able to go. But that's a restriction that had a concern with because it was very wrong. And I requested that the director get some kind of administrative directive to correct that so everybody can have a chance. The reason I say that in closing, I just want to quote one more time the America on the Rehabilitation Act 73, where it says no other qualified handicapped individual in the United States as it defined in Section 76 shall solely by reason of his handicap, his or her handicap, be excluded from any participation and be denied the benefits of or be subject to discrimination under any program and activity receiving federal financial assistance. That is rule. And why they do it that way, is still in the air for concern. So those who are in these other areas are not able to go because there's a restriction, and that's not right.
Thank you, Mr. Delgado. Your 3 minutes is expired, and I appreciate I appreciate you coming and expressing your concerns, and your concerns are not on our agenda today, so we cannot comment on them. But if you would like to have a further discussion, you might want to talk to District North IOC. That's where you are. So, but we appreciate you being here, and we appreciate your comments. Thank you so much. Okay. We'll now move on to item number 4 on the agenda, and it is Jack and Stephanie.
Hello.
Hi.
Linda. I did ask Jack if we can have the presentation for the volunteer coordinator go before them.
Okay.
The volunteer coordinator and Barb both have meetings.
Okay. All right. Then we'll move to recruitment for our dwindling numbers, right, Barb? You're on mute, my dear.
Yes, yes. We are happy to be here today. And I'm going to let Liz talk a bit about our recruitment efforts and how you all can help and what we can do to get this committee up in numbers.
Thank you.
So thank you for having me attend. And with the agenda, I sent to Jeffrey some new recruitment tools that I recently created. The fillable card is a card that I will be using when I exhibit at events. And just by circumstance, this week I have 2 events that our volunteer coordination is going to be at. One of them is a volunteerism civic conference, and the other one is with the YMCA. My hopes with the recruitment tools that I've created is that it can be accessible to members, council members, committee members, to use when they're out in the community, or even to electronically send it to a potential volunteer. I also attached the link to the recent volunteer appreciation event in the event that some of you were not able to attend. I hope some of you can watch it because it was a really, it was a neat event to thank our amazing volunteers. You guys do a lot, and we really appreciate everything that you do for the division. I like to read about volunteerism within our community because I volunteer myself. And I was reading an article about that was just put out about the challenges of bringing back volunteers after the pandemic. And like the Ronald McDonald House is down 50% for their dining program. So all across the USA, charities and organizations are hurting for volunteers. So priority obviously is recruitment, and it takes a village to recruit new volunteers. So OIFA is doing a wonderful job. I'm not the only one doing it. We have numerous staff within our community engagement team that are out there trying to recruit new volunteers. Any questions for me or any concerns that you wanted to express?
This is Carolyn Wilmer. I would love to get a digital copy of those so I could share them digitally with some of my contacts.
I think I did not see it on the attachments, but then I had trouble getting the attachments. So, Jeffrey, if you don't mind sending that out to all of us, that would be great. I did get a referral from Nancy Bartow for a gal. I've had 2 gals who've said that they were going to come on today, but they're not. So, but it's, and truthfully, when they hear everything that we do, it's, I mean, the stuff that we do and the commitment involved, I think that it scares them, because, and I say, you can just take baby steps getting into it, you know, but I think it scares them when you tell them PRC and the reading involved with that, and then reading the incident reports and meetings, and we try to stay up on the legislative stuff as it affects DDD. So it is a big job that agencies do.
Can I ask, what's the time commitment? What's your average time that you're as?
You don't want to ask me. I'm the wrong one to ask, because this is like a full-time job.
What's a typical average amount? Just because I know volunteers ask me, what is the average time commitment? And I want to be honest with them. I don't want to mislead anyone. And I know you folks do a lot of time. To help.
I don't even fill out the timesheets, Liz. So
this is Mandy.
Hi, Mandy.
I mean, I don't know how I do it, because I have my job, plus I have medical stuff and all of that. But I would honestly say to do everything the way that we're supposed to do it. I would honestly say, for me, it's probably, if we do both PRC and all the incident reports we're supposed to, you're looking at, I've done like 10 hours before easy in a month without even really clocking all of it, because I don't have time to do that, because it's 15 minutes here and 20 minutes here.
Okay, so you're thinking yours is about 10 hours a month.
Yeah.
Okay. And then your meeting time, is that in addition to the 10 hours? Because do you do like a two-hour meeting once a month?
Well, we do. Our meetings run longer than 2 hours most of the time.
Okay.
So.
Eva? Eva, you had your hand up.
Well, first of all, I wanted to say I did go to the luncheon, and I thought you did a very lovely job of doing the luncheon. The food was delicious and the program was wonderful. So I thought it was really nice. I always thought they talked about 10 hours, and I thought that was a big joke, because you have 3 hours. I put in almost 15 to 20 hours every month, and I don't even do PRCs. And if you do PRCs, I said, those meetings will almost last 5 hours, plus you have to read the program. So if you do one PRC, I think you add 10 hours of things. So I think I always thought that was just such a real joke when they said, well, it's only a 10-hour commitment. And I said, excuse me? It's always been more than 10 hours.
But Liz, what you could say to them is that, excuse me, Eva, you could, because it does sound scary when you say, because I know I spend about 25, 30 hours a week on it. Wow. But like you could do, just do the incident reports and come to the meeting. And the incident reports come out weekly, and they, depending on how many are in the section that you have chosen to read, because they all come in different different categories. So, I mean, it could easily be 10, like Mandy says, 10 hours a month. It's just what they can contribute, and we're grateful to get what they can contribute, because they all come with the people who want to volunteer are there for a reason, and they care about the DDD community, the IDD community, and that's what we need, is people with a heart who care and who hear things and can bring things to the table. So that's basically what. That's how I got involved. You know, I had an issue with my son Mark, and I went to PRC, and then Karen at the end says, Karen Van Epps, oh, by the way, do you want to join? And I thought, heck no. That's too much work. That was 2002, and here I am. So,
oh my goodness.
Anyways, so
I think the big commitment is if they want to volunteer, they ought to at least commit at least 3 hours or maybe 4 hours because they have to read the information on the fourth Monday of the month. So if they are not available on the fourth Monday of the month, they are not going to make a good volunteer. So right. that is, I think the number one requirement is the fact that they can commit at least 3 or 4 hours on the fourth Monday of the month.
Okay, that's good that's enough. And that's for District Central, right? You meet on the fourth Monday of every month.
We're the only committee that meets during the day.
Got it.
The rest of them are in the
very good information.
Barb, you had your hand up. I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say, Liz and I were talking about that very thing today. You know, if you have a smaller committee, I think there's more work because you can't split the work, right, against, you know, with multiple people. I just want to share some other things that we've been doing for recruitment. We're publishing in all of, well, most of our newsletters. We have a mailed newsletter that goes out twice a year, and we try to get the information about PRC volunteers and IOC volunteers regularly. If it's not in that edition, we're getting it out in our emailed version. And another thing that we're doing, we're going out to, because back in the day when I was in quality, one of the ways we found volunteers was with our parents, right? There's a lot of parents out there that have a vested interest who may want to volunteer. So what we're doing is we're targeting support coordination units, and we're sharing volunteer information with our support coordinators, because they can in turn look at their caseload, see if there's parents that may have, you know, may want to volunteer, may have that passion, plus have that time, right, to volunteer. So that's something that we're doing regularly. We're getting that information out to the field. We're getting it out to our members. One of the things that just came in as a recommendation is we're looking at making little business cards with volunteer information on it, how to get in touch with the division, and on either the back, or we haven't like defined it yet, we haven't designed it yet, but there's going to be a spot if you all have those cards and you want to put your name and number so you can have someone connect with you, because you all can tell someone best and you can convey your passion, and that might engage people to volunteer. So we are really doing what we can. We know with COVID, one of the things, and we talk about this too, it's been hard to bring people in that we pay, let alone now we're telling, you know, asking people to come in and do work for free, right? But hopefully we're seeing a trend moving in the direction of people are kind of engaging again, right? So we're doing our best to get the information out. Any ideas you can give? I know Liz talked about, and we talked about this at the luncheon, if every single person, you know, could think of somebody, right, that might want to volunteer in their life to share that information with that parent. We were giggling because I think many of you know Richard Kautz. I'm like, well, Richard Kautz has been away long enough. I think he might be ready to come back and do some volunteering.
I tried to call him, Barb. Yeah, I think he's avoiding my call, actually. I know what Linda's calling about. I don't want to take that call.
I believe it.
So I tried to get Jose, you know.
Yeah, and Linda, you are on track. And even us as staff here can think of people that have left that might want to come back. So just a little bit about what we're doing, and I just wanted to piggyback on what Liz says. And I thank you all, because I know how much work you all put in every day, and you do it for free. And, you know, we thank you from the bottom of our hearts. And anything we can do to help you get people on board, like I said, to make your lives easier and maybe make that, you know, 80 hours a month a little less, anything we could do to help.
Well, and one thing, too, as you guys know, we've lost two really vital active members just in the last year with Karen and Sherry. So anyway, we need to do a little tribute to Sherry. DD should do something. So,
and Carol.
Yeah.
Well, one other thing that
Carol,
I wanted.
Yeah, Karen and Sherry died. Carol, who's been on the committee mm-hmm. since like its inception, she resigned, you know, a couple months ago. So, I mean, those were three really active mama bears, you know. So, anyway.
One last thing that I wanted to add on to what Barb said was I've created another thing to put into our DES lobbies and agencies and maybe universities as well. It's going to be a flyer that was created by Graphic and Design, and it lists volunteer opportunities, and it's going to have a QR code. So that's another thing on my task list, is to get those out into the community to maybe get people involved and interested.
Thank you, Liz. Just a second, Mandy, I'll get to you, okay? Liz or Barb, with regards to the cards that you were doing, I was just getting ready to reorder business cards, and I was wondering, you know, about putting something like that on there. Maybe you and I can chat, and because I don't know if I want to wait for DDD to come up with a card. Sorry. I kind of am out of them, so I need I'm down to like 20, so I need to order them. But
yeah, you know, Linda, Liz and Michelle are going to work together on developing that. And you know what? Our graphics and design, Liz, correct me if I'm wrong, they're pretty quick with the turnaround. If we can get them something solid, they're pretty quick. And again, just know, Linda, it'll be one of those kind of generic, because we want to use it across the board. And Mary, that's sure. something new that I guess it's good for you to hear about too, because we want to use it for PRC and IOC. So that'll be a card, and we can hopefully, Leah, with our finances, order as many as we want and just pass them out, and everybody can have a little stack so they can share.
Okay. Yeah, Linda, the turnaround with printing is typically right now like 2 to 3 days. So I'm thinking you should have it within a couple of weeks, if all goes well.
Okay. All right. Well, that sounds good. Mandy, real quick.
I just wanted to say, when I said 10 hours, like, that's my absolute minimum. And even, like, because I don't even add up every amount of time I do, because I can't. There's, like, I have 5 minutes before I got to go to work to do this.
I know, and it takes more time to fill out the form and then to try to remember when you did 5 minutes, right? Anyway, so, oh, well.
Well, thank you so much, Mandy.
You're welcome.
We have really appreciate everything that you do, because I know it takes a lot of time. It really does.
Eva?
And just a heads up, if whenever I decide to retire, I'm planning on volunteering with DDD, so you'll have someone else.
Well, as long as it's District Central, that's okay.
I do live in Tempe.
Oh, there you go.
So one of the things that, besides the fact that it's important, the fact that they make the fourth Monday of the month meeting, that you want to point out that volunteerism is mostly on the computer. So it isn't like you're going to go out into the public. And so maybe different people have different things, because they could just stay at home and do your volunteer work at home.
Yeah, we don't have to do an hour drive into Phoenix. So that's
good. That's really a benefit. Yeah. When I do mention that it's virtual, people like that.
That's what is made it so that I can participate more. Because if I had to get into Central by 10 o'clock, there's no way. I can't lose that much sleep. So.
Okay, well, we want to thank you ladies for coming and visiting with us. And we know you've got other meetings. You're welcome to stay until you have to leave, or if you would like to leave now, we appreciate you being here. And just keep in touch with me. Let me know what I can do, and let me know about the cards, as well as the little format, what you fill out, the volunteer card. So we can hand that out as well.
I can mail you some of those, Linda, if you'd like. And then it is in an electronic format as well. And it's fillable electronically as well. Perfect. So you can either give it in person or you can fill it out.
Perfect, because I've got a couple. Okay. All right. Okay. Thanks, you two. Thanks. Bye. Okay, Jack and Stephanie. Yes. And if you guys want to sign up, you know, you heard the spiel, right?
Right. Don't have the time right now.
Yeah. You got your hands full, seriously. Go ahead, Jack.
If you don't mind, I'm going to let Stephanie kind of start.
Perfect.
This. That's the order we're going to go in.
Okay.
Okay. Well, so basically for several months, even before I emailed the concern to DDD in March, our son had a new consumer moved into his group home. They tried, they did a trial where they would slowly introduce this fellow in there. And anyhow, it went pretty quickly though, before they decided to move him in. And so him and his other roommate that he he's had him for several years, but Jackson was alone in this group home for quite a while because of a lot of mental health issues. And that was a little bit of an adjustment, that one roommate, but they it took a couple of years and then they got used to each other and they were pretty settled. But since this last one has moved in, it's been a total uproar for both the residents, and Jackson's starting to have behaviors again. He's been stable for quite some time and we're concerned about him. He's even, I guess, started to get a little bit violent at the group home, and he hasn't been violent with me or at the day program, but I guess, or his dad, but at the group home, I guess he has hit some people. And because he's just, this other consumer comes in his room continuously. He goes out his bedroom window to AWOL. And Jackson's regressed so much, he's hardly talking at all anymore. And I've noticed he's lost a lot of weight. I don't know what's going on because he can't communicate that well about how he's feeling. So we try to get him a lot to try to just get him out of that environment, you know, but we both work, so there's, you know, only so much time we can get him.
It was, just to expand a little bit, it was an improper handoff that was done. I guess the two agencies merged under one umbrella, and there was supposed to be a soft transfer that involved, you know, some help from one of the other agencies, but Steph and I both thought, you know, we would just ride this out for the first few months, and it's to the point where our son isn't sleeping. He's got, you know, obviously behaviors, and the other new resident it's really bad. There's probably 7 staff members in this house at any given time when there used to be 2. I went over there yesterday to get him for his usual weekend visit, and I couldn't even get him to stay for 2 hours. He's just not himself. And we've had so many meetings about this and tried to escalate it, and it's probably going on maybe 6 months. We keep getting news that 90 days, we're looking for a new placement and stuff like that. But this new roommate is just so violent and so, and we both feel bad about it. But the doctors are suggesting increased meds for your son and stuff like that. And it's just, it wasn't like this, you know, and he's been through some changes over the years, but we've never seen anything like this. And we're pretty desperate at this point because we don't want him to go all the way back from where a whole team brought him back to where he is now, where he's just such a happy boy and everything's routine and you know.
Yeah, he used to have, in fact, when he went in that group home, he had 2-to-1 ratio for just himself. They didn't move any roommates in for 2 or 3 years. He just lived alone, and there was a behavior coach there, so there were usually 3 staff just for Jackson until we finally got him stable enough. And even right before he graduated from high school, they weren't sure if he was even going to be able to go back to the day program because he went one summer and he had such bad behaviors. They didn't think after he graduated that their day program could accommodate him, so they tried it out. We actually did a transition where he was in voc rehab half a day at the high school, and then he went half a day to the day program, and he was adjusting okay. And then by the time he graduated, they said he was so good at the day program they didn't even need to have a one-on-one for him over there. So he's been doing so well. And yeah, we're just so concerned about, you know, him regressing. He's gone through regression periods and he comes back, but never back to where he was. You know, he improves, but it, like, his verbalization so reduced compared to when he was a small child. And so these kind of things seem to damage him permanently in a way every time this happens, you know, every time there's something disruptive like this. And yeah, like Jack said, this has been going on for a while, and I guess they've done so many changes in the group home. I mean, they had to put like whatever T11 board up inside the house, this siding, because this consumer's just destroying the house. And it doesn't seem homey. When I go there, I hardly go in because there's just so many staff and so much commotion going on. Sometimes I'll walk back into Jackson's room with him, but a lot of times I just pick him up and drop him off at the door.
The thing that when I read his behavior plan and the PCSP, his planning document, the thing that alarmed me about this was, number one, that it's been going on for so long. Number two, it was supposed to be a temporary placement. Number three, the way he was placed, where it sounded like he was just dumped at the door, basically. I mean, that's how I read it, because there was no transition. The really alarming thing was that now they're telling you as parents to increase his meds so that he can deal with this situation that is not of his making and that he has no control over. And in fact, the agencies and DDD do have control. And so that's why I brought you here. I hoped that we could get some people moving on this a little faster. I know that you've talked to several people in DDD. Leah, do you have anything to offer with regards to this?
First, I want to say that I know that it's hard to be a parent and to see your child struggle. It's very hard, especially when he'd made such progress. I don't know the situation, Linda. It makes me uncomfortable to jump in right now, but to say absolutely, there is no doubt that you know me, and I will be more than happy to try to see what we can do. You mentioned, though, that you had contacted, I assume it was customer service in March. Is that correct?
Matthew Hernandez was assigned.
Okay.
Do you know who he is?
I do.
Yeah. And recently I followed up because it has been quite some time. He was very nice. There was a bit of a delay getting assigned, so I inquired about my concern. I sent the concern on March 3rd, but I did hear back March 17th, I think it was, something like that. Anyhow, but Matthew had told us recently that something like it was now with this committee or something like that. I don't know. I don't know. Jack, do you know? Because I didn't know anything about this. We did talk to
Jack, you're on mute.
But we did talk to the director over at the agency that took over the Tunglin residential portion. And I don't like to, he was nice, but I just felt like we were talking in circles and we had no answers. I had the suggestion of maybe, you know, while this fellow, because I feel bad. This guy needs somewhere to live too, you know, and we feel horrible because if it was our son, you know, that would be terrible. But we said, you know, can't they temporarily put him up in like one of these long stay hotels or apartment or something? I've seen that when I worked in group homes for 11 years before I even had children with developmentally disabled. And it was Mark Center, which is now under another name. And we had our whole group home stayed in a hotel for several months while we had the group home remodeled. So it's not unheard of for somebody. In fact, it might be a nice environment for this guy, being that, you know, he'll be alone in his own environment. And sometimes these are nice, you know, weekly suites where you get free breakfast and things like, so I don't know. I just wish people be a little more creative to make all these situations better for now.
Sure. What I can do, obviously with your permission, is to check in with Matthew, get some clarification. You should not have any doubts about what's happening. So it sounds like we need to put some clarification around if he said it's with, and I don't, nothing leapt to the forefront of my mind when you said committee, but I'm more than happy to look into it. And
his email 4 days ago, and once again, he's always polite, but it said, the last sentence is, this will be closed on our end, but the team will still be working on this, I assure you.
Is that because of an agreement to find a new residential
option? Well, there's two parties involved here. This is Matthew, you know, that had said that. But then we were talking to this other guy from, what's the name of the new agency, Jack?
Mentor?
Not Tunglin, but
Savita Health?
Yes.
Yeah.
That director is the one that, you know, we kind of feel like we're going in circles. Matthew just said, I think someone should have contacted you with more information today. And that's when, you know, we heard, but otherwise the team will provide support. This will be closed on our end, but the team will still be working on this, I assure you. So that's all we know.
His name is Darrell.
Yeah, Darrell's with the agency that the group home is through.
Oh, he was with Mentor. So now he's still with Savita. Oh, I
Savita,
know.
Yeah.
He's really good. I know him.
He's nice and he talks to us, but we don't have a solution. We just feel like we're going
right. Oh no, I get it. I get that. Yeah, that's why we're all here. Yeah.
I would like to do is give you my contact email information in the chat so that you're not telling everybody your contact information. And if you could send me a separate email, then with your best contact information, let us see what we can find out. I would imagine that our network staff are involved behind the scenes as well. But let us see if we can't get you some more specific information. Okay. I'm gonna just put it in the chat. I'm done, Linda. Go ahead.
Stephanie, if I might, Jack, you also mentioned Mary DiCarlo at PRC. You've been visiting with her.
Jack?
Mary DiCarlo? I don't believe I mentioned her.
I don't know who that is. I'm sorry. Maybe. I mean, I don't know if she's been in any of the meetings. Jack actually has been to more of them than me because usually I'm working on Mondays.
Okay. Mary, you don't know anything about this? You haven't heard anything?
I may be a little bit familiar with regard to the other members, but same thing. I can follow up with Leah and once you get the specific information, look into it and happy to support.
Okay. All righty. Thank you, Mary. This is troubling to me, and I hope that you guys will keep in touch with us. And I will, and Leah, if Jack and Stephanie don't mind, keep me in the loop as well so that we know that this issue has been resolved.
Sure. You know, Linda, I'm going to have to work through Jack and Stephanie. You understand that because of PSI.
Right. That's why I'm saying.
Right. Okay. Right, thank you. Right. Just want to make sure.
I get HIPAA. We've been doing this long enough. You guys can't tell me, but they can. So I just want you guys, I just want to be kept in the loop so that I know that Jackson is being taken care of and we don't have to increase his meds. And I understand it's a very small home. Maybe if we just do an emergency placement for the third member, something like that, just so that we can start to get all these years of work restored where he was stable. My heart just goes out to you too. So
thank you.
You both have my contact information and I've got yours. So,
okay. Yes.
And Stephanie, my son went to the Mark Center.
Oh, he did. Well, Jack worked there too. We both did before we had kids for years. Jack,
really? Oh my gosh! He was at Cece's place, so he was one of the naughty ones.
That might have been after I left. I left in about 2003. 2002, 2000. I did some little on call, but full time I left before that.
Yeah. Okay. All righty. Thanks, everybody. Or thanks if you two want to stay on, you're very welcome to do so.
No, but thanks for inviting us. We appreciate it.
Yeah, I didn't know anything out there like this existed. I really, you know, I just didn't know you guys were this involved and there was volunteers like this and this happened like this. So you'll be hearing from me, Linda, but I want to thank y'all.
Okay. Thank you. Yes, take care. Thank you.
Thanks. All right.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Let me just tap that. Next on the agenda. Let's see, we thought Christina would be here. Debbie.
Before you move to the next agenda, I have a comment to make.
Oh, sorry, Eva.
So, and since they left, we can talk about that. You know, they're talking about theirs, but on the same token, Mary DiCarlo, I think that's what she said, is looking at the other member that seems to be.
We don't know. Let's table this. Can we? I'm not comfortable discussing it without the parents being here, Eva, or unless we go into executive.
Well, it's not the fact that, because the parents can't do anything. DD has to help the other member and possibly do the enhanced behavioral group home.
We're going to turn that. We've brought it to their attention, and the parents will keep in touch with us. So let's just leave it at that. All right. I hope you understand. I'm just not comfortable discussing it in a public meeting, open forum like this. Thank you so much. We'll move on to item number 7 on the monitoring, Debbie. Debbie, you're on mute.
Oh, now, okay. Now tell me, ask me again.
Monitoring.
Oh, yes. Oh, sorry, I'm trying to do 6 things. I am, Amy lives in a Tunglin group home. Well, they're Savita now, but they call themselves Tunglin still. And last week they called me like 7 times saying, monitoring is going to be coming and we got to get our books in a row. So what day did she go to the dentist? And then they'd call me back a couple hours later. Now tell us, when did she last see her primary care physician? Well, every time I go to those places, I take their form, fill them out, I need the copy for me, and then I always, always take another copy back to the group home. So obviously they're not keeping their records properly. And then once they know monitoring's coming, then they scramble, they go to the grocery store, they fill up the refrigerator in the pantries, they clean, they get their paperwork all in a row. I don't think that's right. Is there any way we can have monitoring be like unannounced, be a surprise, so that they see what's really going on in the group homes instead of what the group homes want them to see is going on? Does that make sense?
Yes. Mandy, and then go ahead, Mandy.
I was just gonna say, I thought, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I thought that that's the way it was designed to be. I know that's not the way it always goes, though. Like, you know, because even here at Windsor, they have mock surveys like every month or something, and we're always doing fixing all of that stuff. So I agree that it should be how it is normally on like a daily basis. I mean, but I guess like I guess you win. Because one thing that I've always done is when the monitor group gets here, they usually always talk to me because I'm the only one pretty much that can, you know, tell them what really happens. And I share my honest comments with them. And sometimes some staff and some things aren't always in the best of light, but if it's the truth, it's the truth, right? So
exactly. Is there anyone on here who can discuss monitoring and how that's set up to be run?
What was the question?
Anyone here that can talk to us about the monitoring? James, I thought one time you told us about monitoring.
Yeah, well, I used to be a monitor, but I mean, I can explain the broad strokes of monitoring.
Okay.
So they schedule monitoring on a annual or semi-annual basis, depending on the home. So this last year they were doing a pilot monitoring, though, that was a human rights based monitoring. It wasn't the standard monitoring. It was a questionnaire specifically identifying a lot of rights issues. So that wasn't the standard monitoring over the last year. But typically what they do is they go out and they do the site visit. They're looking at all those things that you guys were just talking about, you know, to make sure that all the documentation is up to date, that the site meets certain criteria based on the rules. And then and if they're not, then they request remediation from the vendor, and they track that. And if the compliance level is down below, I think it's 85%, then they go out a second time and do two monitorings in that year. If it's above 85%, they do one monitoring a year. But this year there's a new monitoring going on. Leah, I think, have they started the new monitoring already?
Yes, that's part of the House bill. Is that what you're referring to? The Center for Disability? Yes, and I'll be doing an update on that when I have my opportunity for updates.
Okay. So yeah, I don't know if that's the one that they're talking about, because that is a more recent set of monitorings that just started. So maybe that's the one they're trying to get ready for.
But isn't that for the duly diagnosed or the, so it wouldn't be like for Debbie's group home or just going out to regular group homes and monitoring it. I think the question is that they are told in advance that they're coming out.
They are not told in advance that they're coming out. They are unannounced monitorings, but based on scheduling from the previous year, most agencies have a fairly good line on when they're going to get monitored.
Okay.
They don't get told in advance. But again, if I was monitored around, say, June last year, I know around June this year, I most likely will be monitored.
Okay. Again. All right. So Debbie, does that
mix it up a bit and make it more random so that
They can try to do that. I do know that they would like to do that more, but based on the fact of staffing and the sheer number of homes that we have, it is a very tight fit to get all the homes done in the year, especially since over the last few years, we've been adding more and more services into that monitoring schedule. You know, now they're doing more with like ADHs and CDHs. They're doing more with DTAs. They're doing more with doing HCBS monitoring. So, and they're doing it with very little extra resources. So I know that they struggle to get them all in. So I can't speak for them, but I know that in the past, we've asked them to try to swap out. But when you're talking about some of these big agencies, especially one like Civita that has, you know, hundreds of homes, and you're supposed to do them all together so that you can get a big picture look at an agency to look at the overall, you know, quality of that agency, you can't like break them up into like pieces all throughout the year, because then you can't look at remediation on as the agency as a whole of what kind of systemic issue they might have. That you're talking, those big agencies are very hard to move around.
But when they're not seeing an accurate picture of what really goes on, they're seeing a whitewashed picture of what the agency wants them to see goes on. That just doesn't, that to me defeats the purpose of monitoring. But
I'd be happy to share that with them. But I do know that they do have that concern as well, that they do try to, push all their cleanup to right before they get monitored. But I've seen the monitorings of these big agencies, and you can't clean up an entire agency in a month, is what I feel like.
No, but they were hustling to clean and dust and stock their refrigerators and get all their, ducks in a row as far as paperwork, which they let go all year long, and then all of a sudden they travel.
It should be being done all year round. You're absolutely correct.
I don't know what can be done, but that was a concern.
Mandy?
I was just going to say, at least I know for us, if one of the other homes that gets monitored before us gets monitored, then everybody is in the state-operated agency knows, and they kind of disseminate that information. So that could be what's happening with Mentz, with what's going on with this agency, is that they're recognizing that they showed up at one home, so now they're trying to make sure they don't get in big trouble, and that's how they get the advance notice sort of thing.
Well, yes. And Carolyn?
My thought was that it would be, I think it would be lovely to have this in the parent/family member manual, explaining that organizations are, monitored on an annual or semi-annual basis, and that it's very difficult to do this randomly, and that, if the agency is contacting the parent for last minute cleanup of documentation, that's something that the parent can let the monitoring agency know and give them a way to do that.
On the other hand,
how do we do that?
So I will say this though, if you were to make a complaint through the incident reporting process, and we identify that their agency is not meeting the obligations, we do health and safety visits for almost 100% of all of the incidents that are determined to be incidents that might affect the health and safety of a member. And we do basically an on-site visit that looks at almost all the same stuff that monitoring does, all the paperwork, the food, the cleanliness, all the fire safety stuff, whether or not they're following the PCSPs. I mean, we do that for almost all the visits whenever we do get a complaint too. So if you notice that the vendor is dropping the ball on something and make a complaint, we'll follow up on it outside of the regular monitoring process. And there's no heads up on that either. I mean, that's not like all the agencies at once. That's just like that home. If you reported it today, we would be out there today or tomorrow.
James, I have a question for you with regarding expectations in the home when they go out for monitoring. At one time, I heard that they had to have 3 days' supply of food on hand based upon the menus. And then I heard that, no, that's not correct. But then I was reading the new policies, and it seems that there needs to be, or that that's part of one of the new policies, is that there will be 3 days food in the home based on the menus. Is that correct?
That's what we recommended. I have not seen the final version of the policy. There was no policy on it before, which is, so there was just a best practice that we were emphasizing to vendors that they have at least 3 days worth of food. And then it was down to, if they didn't have the next three meals, then it becomes more of a health and safety issue that they would need to shop, because again, that's 1 day's worth of food basically if you have the next three meals. Yeah. So they should be out shopping by then. But I did hear that they were going to try to add that into the policy. I haven't seen the final version of it.
Yeah. Well, I think it's still out for public comment.
Yeah.
But yeah, I saw that and I thought, good, that's needed. I appreciated that. So
mm-hmm.
Debbie, do you have any other questions or concerns regarding monitoring? So I think the bottom line is that if you see, if for any parent, if they see something that is amiss or needs to be cleaned up, to call who, James?
You can call customer service, or you can call it into the incident reporting.
Okay. All righty. So.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Debbie. Okay, Carolyn, we're on review of the provider policy manual chapters number 8 on the agenda.
Okay, great. So I'm going to start with the document that is mostly handwritten. And I believe that document was sent out to everybody. This is I call it a quick and dirty, although it took me quite a bit of time to review this and write it up. But so this document is titled Prep for May 22nd IOC Meeting. And the first item on the document, well, actually, let me start with this. So I do want to see that all uses of the word shall or shall not are replaced with something else, another word, preferably will or will not. Shall has no legal meaning. It doesn't mean that they must do it. It means that they can do it if they want to, basically. And that's straight from the Supreme Court. The other question I have is that there's different manuals. So there's a division operations manual. And if I'm correctly understanding, that manual is intended for the actual use by the division, by DDD, correct? So DDD is the target audience, right? DDD staff.
Leah,
yeah. I'm kind of shaking my head in that
you're going yes and no.
Limited to DDD staff. It is inclusive of all our qualified vendors, and their contracts must comply with all division policies. That includes the operations manual, the medical manual, the eligibility manual, behavior supports manual. It's all, but there's specific policies for the provider manual.
Okay. Okay. And then what is the difference between the provider manual and the provider policy manual?
I have to admit, I have not. We call it the on our webpage, the drop down is provider manual.
Okay.
And division provider manual is other terminology for it.
Okay. Because I'm thinking that it might be helpful if that was clarified, because there's the group home requirements, which is listed as chapter 54 of the provider manual.
Mm-hmm.
Then the provider policy manual, the one that references that, for example, is chapter 26, cultural competency and member and family-centered care. So to me, it's a little bit confusing as to whether they're the same manual or different manuals. So I think the terminology should be really
again. It's on the web page. It says mm-hmm. provider manual,
mm-hmm.
and if someone is using provider policy manual, someone's adding more words. It's the provider manual.
Okay, so maybe those documents that are titled that have provider policy manual, maybe they can delete the policy in it
as part of that. I can certainly look into it. I have to say that I'm not following you terribly well, and it would help to see the documents.
Yeah. So on the top right,
of all the pages of these documents. It'll say, for example, Division of Developmental Disabilities, Division Medical Manual, Chapter 900, Quality Management and
Performance. Yes, I know what you're talking about now. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. So, okay.
Let's keep talking because because the documents themselves say Provider Policy Manual.
Some of them do, yes. And some just say Provider Manual.
Okay, well, I'm going to have to open some to look, but the ones I'm opening say Provider Policy Manual. So if there's one that it does not say that, then we can absolutely take that back to the policy unit.
Yes, so the one that doesn't say that, as an example, is Chapter 54, Group Home Requirements.
And I don't see Chapter 54 as posted. Is that for public comment at this time?
That's one of the items that I'm going to be...
It's out for early.
So it's not finalized and it's a brand new policy.
Right.
So it's out for early public comment. It'll go for public comment. Once it's finalized, it should read just like the others.
Okay, great. Okay. And then my other question is, we've got the Division Medical Manual and the Medical Policy Manual. Is there a difference between those manuals?
No.
Okay. So again, that's these are things that were sent out for public review. And so it would be great if they could be more consistent.
Please understand, again, there's new ones and there's existing ones.
Right. These are ones that were sent out, 1290 Behavioral Health Advocacy, Chapter 300.
Right. But again, some of them are new.
Okay.
And that's why you have them. They haven't ever hit the streets before and they're not out for public comment yet. They're just there for your comment.
Okay, great. So now let me get into the nitty gritty about the policy. So so the first one I'm going to talk about is item number one on my handwritten list, the Division Medical Manual. I just wanted them to change the word physician to licensed physician because that's really important. That they should be sending them to someone who is a licensed physician in Arizona, not just a physician.
That's something that you would want to, as a committee, to agree upon and then send us back in your comments.
Right. Okay. And Linda, how do you want to handle the agreements? Do you want to do that?
What we'll do after you go through all of this mm-hmm. is we will make a motion that we submit it as a committee, these changes. And then I will type it all up and send it in as part of our comments back to where we need to send it.
Okay. So item page two, item 3G, I'd like to change a registered nurse to a registered nurse with for the two bullet points that follow it, just to be really clear. And then item number two, the Division Medical Manual 1290, Behavioral Health Advocacy, page three, item A3. If you scroll down a little bit, it says behavioral health advocates may work with a member for a short period of time to learn how to better advocate for themselves and navigate the behavioral health system. So my questions are, why would they only work with the member? Why not the guardian or the public fiduciary? Why only for a short period of time? How short is short? I'm concerned about the may work. Because that's not defining. So we need to have a definition of when it is necessary for the behavioral health advocate to work with the member or the responsible adult. And then scrolling down a little bit further. And then as the member is, as it's currently written, the themselves refers to the behavioral health advocate. So I would reword it to say when necessary, BH advocates will work with a member or their guardian or public fiduciary to teach them how to better advocate for the member and navigate the BH system. And then scrolling down a little bit further.
Carolyn, excuse me. What about and or?
Yes. Thank you. Excellent. Yes. A member and or their guardian or public fiduciary.
And or public fiduciary.
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Okay. We've got, I don't know.
Jeffrey, can you mute Eduarda?
Sorry, my husband was talking to me. Excuse me.
Okay.
And then the next item, the BH advocate has a non-adversarial role to support members and families in advocating for themselves through collaboration with system partners. So just clarifying the wording a little bit.
That's better.
Okay. And then item five, this is really confusing. So I wanted to make it two sentences. Right now it says the support coordinator shall not make a referral to a BH advocate through the division's Office of Individual and Family Affairs, OIFA, when a member is assigned to a BH human rights advocate through the access office, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So what I want to do is I want to make it two sentences. The first says the support coordinator will not make a referral for a BH advocate through the division's Office of Individual and Family Affairs, OIFA, when a member is already assigned a BH human rights advocate through the Access Office of Human Rights-Special Assistance, period. The BH human rights advocate, comma, through the Access Office of Human Rights Special Assistance, comma, will request to collaborate with a BH advocate through the division to assist with meeting with members' needs when necessary, period.
I have a question regarding that. Okay, so you're saying Behavioral Health Human Rights Committee, but these are DD members. So why not the IOC human rights? Leah.
Thank you. Access has a special area that supports members who are designated with a serious mental illness. Okay. And they call that area their Behavioral Health Office of Human Rights Special okay. Assistance Program. That's what okay. that's their name.
Okay. All right. Okay. So this is all Access. Okay, thank you.
Great, okay. And then going down some more.
Leah, or Carolyn, back up, back up, Jeffrey. What is that definitions of when necessary? What does that mean? Carolyn?
So my concern was that when you say they may do something and you don't say when it's, when you say may do something, it leaves it open-ended as to whether or not they're going to do it. And so you need to say they will do it and these are the circumstances in which it's necessary. So I'd like to see DDD spell out the definition of when it's necessary. And I'm afraid I wasn't able to get to
that. I see. Okay. All righty. Okay. Thanks, Jeffrey. Number three.
Okay. So this is the Division Operations Manual, and I won't read it, but there are the definitions of abuse. And if we scroll down, so I'd like to break up the first sentence into two and revise it. So I kind of have issues with the definition of abuse as written. So the way I reworded it was to be a little bit more, try to be a little bit more inclusive. So the first sentence would be abuse means the infliction or allowing another individual to inflict or cause physical pain or injury, impairment of bodily function, comma, or disfigurement, period. And then on the next page, there's the second sentence and it would say, It also means infliction or allowing another individual, to inflict serious emotional distress or damage, which may be evidenced by visible emotional distress or anxiety, verbal expressions of emotional distress or anxiety, depression, withdrawal, or untoward aggressive behavior.
Carolyn, and I think we stole the definition from Access to match Access's definition of abuse.
Okay, so so my questions are, how is serious defined? Is it defined by severity? Is it defined by length of time? You know, when it comes to emotional abuse, it can be very subjective, but it should be, you know, it should be emotional abuse as experienced by the member. So if the member is experiencing emotional distress as a result of someone's behavior, then in my mind, it qualifies as emotional abuse. And if you scroll down a little bit further, this is from the medical manual 961 incident, accident and death reporting, where it says verbal emotional abuse means remarks or actions directed at a member that are ridiculing, demeaning, threatening, derogatory, or profane. And so my question is, there are things that can happen that are abusive that are outside that definition. So for example, my sister-in-law was in DDD care, and we had a situation where a parent of another member in the group home was telling Nicole, your mom doesn't love you. And if your mom loved you, she would be here right now. And number one, Nicole believed everything anybody ever said to her implicitly. She had no mental filter to say, maybe that person doesn't know, or maybe that person is lying to me. So she found this very distressing, and we had a great deal of difficulty getting DDD to address the behavior of this other member, this other member's parent, who is upsetting Nicole so much. So so there are other definitions of abuse. And one of them that I liked is diminishes the sense of identity, dignity, self-worth, and I added, and safety. So I'm wondering if it has to align with Access, if there's a way that we can change the definition so that it's more inclusive and more reflective of the things that can happen to our members.
Leah, you were shaking your head or nodding.
We are required to align with Access.
Yeah.
Just okay. As an FYI, now, Carolyn, you've got some outstanding recommendations that I would still encourage the committee to consider, because maybe they can go in procedures and not in policy.
Okay.
Oh, that's good. That's a good thought. Okay. Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Great. Let's scroll down some more. Let's see. Okay. And then number seven, this is just a comment on my part, because neglect as specified in ARS, obviously, we can't change that, but it was interesting to me that it always talked about intentional, because as anyone who's been following certain legal things in the news lately, it's very difficult to prove intent. And so this seems to imply that if this wasn't intentional, it wouldn't qualify as neglect, which is concerning to me.
That is a concern in the law.
Yes.
Okay. So that was just something I wanted to share. And then scrolling down a little bit more, for the Division Medical Manual 961, which is incidental accident and death reporting, on page 2, number 3, the wording is, community complaint means a complaint from the community that puts a member or the community at risk of harm. And I think what they actually mean is a community complaint is a complaint from the community about a situation that puts a member or the community at risk of harm. So it's not the community complaint that's putting the member at the risk or the community at risk, it's the situation that's putting the community or the member at risk.
Carolyn,
mm-hmm.
Can I just ask if you're an English major?
No, I'm not.
I am, and I was looking for the object to that. So so you put it in there. Thank you.
Yeah, I was a biology major. But I had a liberal arts degree. So I'll tell you, that made all the difference in the world.
Yeah, it does. There's an object. Yeah. To be into that. Correct.
And then the next one is page 5, number 18. So sexual abuse means any inappropriate interactions of a sexual nature toward or solicited from a member with developmental disabilities. And I know it probably has to be worded this way, but my question is, what would be an appropriate interaction of a sexual nature? So, because when you say inappropriate interactions of a sexual nature, it's almost implying that there might be an appropriate interaction of a sexual nature.
Well,
so that was just a thought.
There can be appropriate interactions of a sexual nature based on member choice.
Okay.
Consensual sex.
So there could be an appropriate interaction between a member and
anyone they choose.
Okay. And given the, oh boy. Okay. I totally believe in members being able to have sexual relationships, when they can choose so, but I'm kind of concerned about the imbalance of power in this. So
well, maybe a definition of inappropriate interactions.
Well, your question was, would there be an appropriate interaction of sexual interaction or, of a sexual nature? And there are appropriate interactions of a sexual nature with members. We have members that are married. We have members that live with boyfriends or girlfriends. We have all kinds of appropriate sexual interactions between members. That's the answer to your question.
Okay.
Well, if you want to change or ask that inappropriate be defined, that's another question, but
okay. So I'm not really thinking about, I'm thinking specifically about staff and members, not members and boyfriends and girlfriends and husbands and wives. I'm more thinking about staff, and how we make it clear that, I don't see how there could be an appropriate sexual interaction, between staff and member.
So maybe instead of the what would be inappropriate, put what would be or define inappropriate interaction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Because in the situation,
it gets into a lot of gray area, because an adult member who makes choices for themselves falls in love with their staff. Now, it doesn't mean that it's a professional, mm-hmm. but it doesn't mean it's illegal.
Okay.
And sexual abuse is a legal term. So again, it gets into where we have to be very careful with the wording that we do or imply when it comes to that, because we have had members who have gone on to have relationships with staff or ex-staff that was not considered illegal.
Right. Okay.
And that happens not just in the IDD world.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So what
doctors and patients aren't supposed to fall in love, but occasionally they do.
Right.
And secretaries and bosses aren't supposed to, but sometimes.
Right.
Right. And
so what do you want to do about that, Carolyn?
So to me, like, for example, let's take an example just from like the world of college. So let's say, for example, a professor and a student are interested in each other. Ideally, professorial / student relationship would have ended before the other relationship began. To avoid those issues. So, I'm just really struggling with this, because I can see how that could happen. But I also feel like for someone to be a member of staff and to be having a relationship of a sexual nature with a member is just so iffy to me. Now, if they were an ex-staff, like if they were not working as a staff for that member anymore, and then they had a relationship, that's different. But I'm just so, I understand the difficulty. I'm just so,
We would look at this at the exact same thing, Carolyn. I mean, these are the same questions that we have whenever we utilize this in our incident reporting. So, I mean, that's how we look at it. We would delve down into the whether it is appropriate or not, whether or not members made choices, whether or not it was professional, whether or not the staff then needs to be removed from providing service or needs to be elevated to the police as, you know, sexual abuse or APS or DCS, whichever, depending on the age of the member. Those are all the questions that we use when looking at this particular issue.
Okay.
What if you put in non-consensual? Inappropriate, non-consensual.
This is the access definition.
We can't. Okay, never mind.
This is the access definition of sexual abuse.
Okay.
Let's move on.
All right.
We can't change this. Let's just trust that James and his gang are doing it well. So, thank you.
Okay, so skip page 8, number 4P. And then go back up again, please. And then number 4Q, theft or loss of member monies or properties less than $1,000. Presumably things over $1,000 would be a police report or reported to DDD under a different chapter. And so that was my first question. Then my second question was, why is this in the division medical manual?
It's a type of incident.
Sorry, just a second. I'll put you on pause for a second. Ozzy, shut up.
I knew she wasn't talking to me.
She goes on mute to do that, James.
I'm so sorry. My house cleaner was here, and I had to give her the check, and my dog was freaking out.
So this is just it's in the same area as the other references for other types of incidents. This is just another type of incident. They're all in the same area.
Okay. All right. Let's see. And then let's go down to number 5, which is the medical policy manual for adult routine dental services. What I would say is actually I would suggest renaming that to Arizona Long-Term Care System Adult Dental Services and leave out the routine because it really does cover routine and emergency care. So that would be my first suggestion.
Our dentist actually separated the two into two different policies, Carolyn.
Oh, okay. So I found this and let me add, I wrote dental policies for Head Start. So I'm kind of like, this is something I'm really familiar with. So I was very confused by the way the dental policies are written because, this one talks about all techs and then the other one talks about emergent dental services for members 21 years of age or old and older and doesn't mention all techs.
That's correct.
So for this one, the all techs adult routine dental services, is there a separate policy for all techs adult emergency dental services?
No, the emergency adult services are all inclusive to any Access Medicaid member.
Okay.
But again, have your conversation as a committee. Feel free to send forward your recommendations.
Okay.
And they would go back to the people who worked on the policy.
Okay. Yeah. Because I was really confused by who was covered by those two dental policies and whether or not it covered routine and emergency care. So,
it helps have your input though, Leah. We appreciate that.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. I'm happy to. I don't want to knock down your thoughts.
Sometimes that's not my intent. We don't want to send it in unnecessarily, you know.
Right, that's exactly.
What worked for us.
Yeah. So thank you, Leah. Keep telling me stuff.
We learn every meeting.
So item number two, I suggest changing it to the division will refer to Access AMPM 430 for dental services for members under the age of 21, just to clarify for anyone that that isn't the Access policy. And then number three, the division will require emergent services for members which are covered as specified, blah, blah, blah. So, and then emergent is never really defined in this document. So it might be helpful just to clarify what that means, because it's not in the, I don't believe it's in the definitions of this document.
Leon, number two, is that appropriate to put Access AMPM in there? Or no?
It's kind of unnecessary, but in that AMPM is the Access
right
document. But there's no harm making it's redundant.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And then let's scroll down a little bit more. So page six, item D2C4, it refers to pulpotomies. It does not talk about pulpectomies. And technically a pulpotomy is removing the pulp from the crown of the tooth. Usually when you see the term pulpotomy, it refers to children and their baby teeth, but not always. And a pulpectomy is what adults usually get, and that's where you're removing all the pulp in the tooth from the crown and the root, otherwise known as a root canal. Yes, exactly.
I hate going to the dentist. This whole talk is just driving me nuts.
Yeah. I know a really good root canal guy.
Okay, enough.
So I just wanted to clarify that, because as written right now, the policy doesn't talk about pulpectomies. And, you know, most adults are going to need, if they need to have the pulp removed, it's going to be a pulpectomy. And then my other concern was, you know, we've got these dollar limits on care for members, and I'm concerned about this in the situation. Oh, and the dollar amount can't be carried from one year to the next. So when we have members who are very difficult to get medical exams for them, you know, what is the group home doing? What is DDD doing to try and ensure that we get that member in for a regular exam? Because it would be really easy for someone to, you know, not see a dentist, and then end up with a really significant amount of dental work that needs to be done to keep them free of pain and infection.
Leah.
Thank you. So, Carolyn, we all recognize that. Please know that the limits that are set on dental services are legislated. They're not a choice for us. And the fact that they don't carry over year to year is also part of that legislated.
Right.
However, when a member resides in a service setting that they are assessed for room and board, there are processes in place to be able to put a waiver on the room and board payment to save that money to offset costs that are not covered services. So there is a process for that. It comes to families, members who live with their own family, that's kind of a different story. The division doesn't have like a pot of money that we can give cash to people, but we certainly do have lists of dentists and dental places that are lesser cost that we can make those referrals to help the family make those choices. But there is a process when we're looking at somebody who needs a significant amount of dental work, because we recognize that having healthy teeth certainly correlates to health.
Great. Okay, thank you. Yeah.
Carolyn, one thing too that you might not be aware of is that this is really a good thing that we have this, because for quite some time dental coverage was only for 18 up to 18. So anyone 19 and over did not have dental coverage, and we worked really hard to get this to be recognized as a continuing need for adults. And we appreciate the division and all that they did to help us get that through. the other thing too, with regards to getting regular dental exams, and I had this come up in PRC just this last week, the members also have a right to choose whether or not they want to go to the dentist. And so the, you know, we recognize the need and that it's part of your good health, but they still have the right to choose whether they want to go or not. And right. That was the problem. The behaviors were so severe in this one individual. Well, I've seen it several times, but the dentist's office refused to see them, and they had been to 3 different dental offices. So,
right.
You know, they still have their choice per Article 9. Mandy.
I was just going to say, like, for me, because, and I'm easy to go to the dentist with, but certain dentists try and charge me, like, an extra fee because they need, like, a dental assistant in there with them to make sure, like, I don't choke or whatever. And that extra fee is not covered by even my Medicare insurance. So that can also be a barrier to some of the members, especially that live in their own homes. Like, I know where I live, I have access to certain things that other people don't. But I'm just saying that is sometimes a barrier. And sometimes it's a $60 fee, like, every time you go, which... when I encountered a dentist's office like that, I was like, that's ridiculous, because why should I have to pay for your staff that's already here working? Like, and they were like, it doesn't matter, you require it, so we're going to charge you. The dentist I go to now is part of a dental foundation, so they charge it too, but they don't charge me. They follow all of the rules that access set forth, like access, you're not supposed to be charged for things without, like, prior notice, you know.
Yeah.
And so
that's good to know, though. That's good to know.
I just wanted, because I know Carolyn was asking, why don't you know, or how are we injured? Everybody gets it. Well, if they can't afford that extra fee because they do have those extra behaviors and need the anesthesia or the assistant, then that could be a barrier.
Thank you for that information, Mandy. Okay, we're going to move on to item number 9. Carolyn, discussion on medical policy manual. Do you have more, or did we cover everything?
Yes, I do. Really quickly, it's the Medical Policy Manual 300, and it's 310-D1 Emergent Dental Services for members 21 years of age and older.
What number was it? 310 what?
310-D1.
D as in dog?
Yes.
D1, okay.
Yes, and... for item number 6, it's missing, it defines a responsible person, and I think it's missing a comma after adult with a developmental disability. And then, let me see, and then item number 8 talks about the division shall not subject services outlined in subsection 3, 4, 5, and 7 of this section to the $1,000 adult emergency dental limit. I think it's confusing to have that after those sections, so I'm wondering if it could be structured differently in this policy to clarify it, so that as you're reading sections 3, 4, 5, and 7, you're aware that it's not limited to the $1,000 limit. And let's see, I don't think I had much.
I don't understand that, Carolyn.
Oh, okay. So basically, there is, let me go here. Okay. So for item A, it says general covered dental services. And it says that emergency dental services up to $1,000 per member per contract year. And so you're reading the things that follow, thinking that they're all under a $1,000 limit. And you're getting a little anxious because $1,000 doesn't go very far. And then you get to item number 8 and it says, oh, go back to items number 3, 4, 5, and 7, and they're not subjected to the $1,000 limit.
Okay, and what's your concern?
My concern is just that it's confusing that that clarification comes after you've read those sections.
So maybe in each one of those put, but not yes. subject to the $1,000 limit?
Yeah, I think that would be helpful because I think, you know, when you read something one way and then you read a disclaimer that's on a completely separate page, you know, it's just, to me, it's just confusing. So
which ones are the ones again that are not subject to the limit?
It is A. Let me just go back here. So it is A. So under policy, it's A, general covered dental services, and it's items number 3, 4, 5, and 7.
Okay. Leah, you're squinting up there. What's going on? You're on mute.
My problem is that I don't have these policies in front of me. And so I don't remember exactly what they say where. But again, I recommend, again, send in the recommendation. It may or may not be something that, you know, we're going to be able to do, but we will absolutely look at any feedback that the IOC gives us.
Okay. Thank you for that.
Yeah. And then on page 9 of this document, it refers to pulpotomies, but not pulpectomies. So it's page
9. You're going to send these in to me, right?
Yeah.
So I don't need to write these down.
I already have. Maybe you didn't get them because maybe it was too much data in the email, but I'll send them to you again separately.
Okay. I got what I forwarded to everybody and also to Jeffrey, which is what we saw on the screen. That's all I got.
Yeah. And then item number D, it says division and FSS program responsibilities. I think FSS might mean FFS, fee for service. It says FSS as in Frederick Samuel, and I think it may mean fee for service, but I'm not sure.
So it should be Frank Samuel, not Frank Samuel Samuel?
I think so, yeah.
Okay.
Just send it in as a question, yeah. And they can verify it.
Okay. And then it also, under that, there's item number 1, the division shall require the ADSS to provide the following, and it's capital A, small d, yes. large S.
That's the administrative services subcontracts. Those are the subcontracts to the DDD health plans.
Okay, thank you. And I'm just writing that down. Okay, that's great. And then on page 10, it talks about all services being subject to a retrospective review to determine whether they satisfy the criteria for a dental emergency. And then they might be subject to recoupment. So I was just wondering if that meant that, you know, the families might get billed.
It depends. If the member is long-term care eligible, it would have to be determined to be not a covered service, and then possibly, but I don't know the answer because it would be on a case-by-case basis, Carolyn.
Okay. Let's see. And then
this is what happens when DDD sends us out a whole lot of policies in 1 month.
Yes, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
No, it's good. I mean, that's what we're supposed to do.
It's exactly what we count on you for.
Yeah.
Right. And then on page 11, the division shall ensure providers who bill members for emergency dental services exceeding $1,000 limit conduct the following. And it might be helpful to say conduct the following before providing services.
Okay.
And then on page 12, it talks about the provider must first inform the member in a way they understand about the requested dental services exceeding the limit. And I wanted it to say member and or responsible adult, or however it should be worded.
All right. Like you did before?
Yes. Previously?
Okay. All right. Okay.
Yeah. And then on page 13, this may be not be necessary, but item number 2 says the division shall require dentists performing general anesthesia on members shall bill using dental codes. And I wondered if that should be access dental codes for clarity. And then the same for item number 3, shall bill using medical codes. Maybe it should be access medical codes for clarity.
Yeah, okay. Those are CMS codes.
Oh, okay.
They're all the same. They're all the same, right, Leah? Okay. They're all the same. Yeah.
Okay, great. Okay. And then on page 14, item number CIV, so C4, talks about pulpotomies but not pulpectomies. And that's it for that policy. And I want to say, you know, dental care in Arizona is a terrible problem. And period. I mean, not just for people with developmental or intellectual disabilities, but it's a terrible problem because the need so outstrips the resources available. And, you know, in public health, we call them terrible problems, which means that they are really intractable problems that really don't have good solutions. So I just want to say, you know, I had all these criticisms, but I realized that, you know, it's a real challenge and there are a lot of issues that not a lot can be done about. So,
Carolyn, might I just say, I don't think it's criticism. I think it's clarification.
Mm-hmm.
So, and you did good. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's move on to number 10 then, the policy 6002, mortality review.
Now, do you want to address the cultural competency and language access plan? Should we discuss that at the next meeting? It's 2 policies on cultural
competency. Is that the one that you and Eva were working on?
No, it wasn't. Okay. Yeah, this is one I just looked at myself.
Let's table this until the next one because we're getting short on time.
Yes.
We need to make a, and it does, we have time to respond to that,
yes.
Right?
Okay. Yes.
All right. And then let's have a motion on Carolyn's clarifications for the policies that she has just submitted. Eva?
I have problems with doing the whole thing and voting on the whole thing because I have issues with different ones in there. And I sent it in the next agenda item is I am also talking about the same thing she did. And so therefore,
Let's hold off on the motion then, and you present your concerns, and then we'll do a motion. How's that?
Okay.
Okay. What are your, let's do then, we'll table, Jeffrey, we're going to table item number 10 for next month, and we are moving on to item number 11, policy review questions from Eva.
Okay. So part of, I sent you and Carolyn those for because I had issues with them and obviously Carolyn had issues, but actually I needed clear. So they have, this is for Leah, this is the early notification for ADSS Medical 961. And they talk about incidents, accidents, and deaths. And so my question maybe possibly to James is, what, I mean, I understand the definition, but what happens with a sentinel event? What do you do about it? I mean, you know, there's a whole list, if Jeffrey scrolls down, of what is a sentinel event, but on the same token, what does the investigation, what does DD do with a sentinel vent once they have it?
So, Eva, as you know, there's a lot of different categories that fall into sentinel events, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So each and every one has its own process that is followed related to it. So do you have a specific one in mind that you have a question about?
No. Well, I just was curious. Well, actually, you clarified it I guess part of what happens is, you know, it's like you label things. And so what do you do when you label it? But so each one of the sentinel events have a different outcome for being a sentinel event.
It has a different, there's like a general thing. We determine if it's a quality of care concern. We notify the appropriate legal authorities, whether it's APS, CPS, law enforcement, if necessary. We collaborate with the investigative body. Sometimes it's us, sometimes it's them, sometimes it's together. We would take whatever appropriate action would need to occur. And the term IADs, is a term that Access uses as incidents are uploaded into their portal system. And so they call them IADs, just so that you know, but they're still generated off of our incident report.
Okay. Well, because that was another question I needed to understand. Are IRs or NMIC suddenly becoming an IOD or what?
So, well, once they're uploaded into the Access system that we've been talking about for a long time, wanting to use their portal system for incident reporting, when that transition occurs, an incident report that is uploaded, they refer to them as IADs.
Okay, got it. So I just wanted to understand. So up at the top, Jeffrey, it's ADSS Medical 961. Right. And you scroll down, and then there's an early notification of medical 961. What is the difference between the ADSS and the division's medical 961?
An ADSS is an administrative subcontract that goes to our DDD health plans. They have to follow policies that we put online for them. And those are administrative subcontracts. So the DDD health plans are the ADSS policies. The medical manual policies are our policies that are for us and all of our qualified vendors that we contract with. And the two policies, when you line them up side by side, are generally almost identical, except it's not uncommon in the DDD policy that is in our medical policy to include some of the information about how DDD provides oversight to the health plans for compliance with the policy.
Okay, thank you.
That's good to know. Thank you.
So under the medical 961, they talk about monitoring compliance through tracking and trending. And I have started to see in the IR, closed IRs, where they talk about trending. And in the executive sessions, I do have an issue about a death where there were 25 IRs trending. And so what exactly do you do when you have these trending things?
It would be best responded to by the quality assurance manager. I can give you some general information. Sure. I can tell you that when they see trends, there are actions that the division may very well take, and it might be performance improvement plans, it might be educational plans, it might be corrective action with qualified vendors and how they follow their processes and policies. But when they see trends, it triggers another level of oversight. And for example, we put out like informational flyers around choking and asphyxiation because we saw trends of members who were choking and potentially dying from asphyxiation, and we weren't doing enough education out in the community about it. And those are some of those performance improvement type strategies that we follow. But if there's a trend around a particular case, it would be something that the quality improvement
area of the division would be looking at, and it might be going back to that vendor agency and looking at their processes and systems. It might be looking broader than that about our process in providing oversight of those incidents. It just depends on the circumstances and what we're trending. But does that help? Oh, James can add more.
Thank you.
James, go ahead.
So it also could mean that we bring together other parts of our own internal teams to discuss on specific member trends. Like, so if we feel like we need to bring together support coordination, behavioral health, or network, or quality, or monitoring, those trends can then key us into specific things that are going on with specific members, as well as all the stuff that Leah was talking about, systemic issues within vendors when we're looking at across vendor things, when we're looking at everything that goes on within a group home, say multi-members in a group home, multi-members in an agency, district issues that are going on within specific districts, issues that are going on in regions within the state. You know, if we're looking at areas like everything that's affecting maybe specifically Yuma, or areas like in District North when we were having displacements due to fires. Those are the types of things that we can trend, and then we can come up with responses based on those trends. So it's not one thing. It just depends on what the trend is, how we respond.
Okay.
But I can assure you that we do trend and we do respond.
Yeah. I've started noticing that cute little word in my closed IRs. And I have commented on those trending things. Anyway, the group home requirement one, that 54 group home requirements. 54 group home requirements down here. You had it up, Jeffrey. Yeah, 54 group home requirements. Okay. So, maybe we could discuss the 3 days worth of meals if we think that's enough. But I'm trying to talk about the things that Carolyn talked about. So in that 54 group home requirements, they talked about the enhanced behavioral group home additional requirements. And does this mean we now have enhanced behavioral group homes, Leah?
It means we're almost there.
That's a result of that law, right, Leah?
That's part of it, Linda. Yes. Yes.
Okay.
It's been an ongoing process.
Okay. So I just, so, you know, Carolyn went into, if you go down just a tad, Jeffrey, down, scroll. Okay. Stop right there. So Carolyn talked about that 1290 behavioral health policy. Now, according to that, I think, I don't know if that's early or if that's final. So what I need to know is because she was talking about these advocates, and yet in the enhanced behavior group home, they were talking about just providing a minimum of 10 hours of clinical oversight with a minimum of 50% of the hours provided on site. And so what I needed to know is, DD's really, has these policies here and these policies here, and yet they sort of mesh together. So is this behavioral health advocate going to be used in the enhanced behavioral group homes?
The behavioral health advocacy program is under me in the Office of Individual and Family Affairs. And our behavioral health advocates, we have four. We are in the process of hiring a fifth. And they are available by referral from the support coordinators to assist the members and their families in navigating the behavioral health systems of care in Arizona. An individual who resides in an enhanced behavioral group home may or may not need a behavioral health advocate because they may very well know what they need and how they need it and can advocate for that, but they may need assistance. It just depends. The clinicians that oversee the enhanced behavioral group homes, about those 10 hours a week, is not related to the advocacy program from OIFA.
Oh, okay. And can you explain what this nesting is all about? I mean, it's sort of weird. What does that mean? Is that nesting, trying to get people out of the enhanced behavior group home type of thing? Or what is that?
Or is that I am not involved in this one, Eva. And I think that you're welcome to send up that question and have someone other than, unless someone else is on the call from the division that has the answer to that.
Okay.
Is Mary because, still on?
I don't think she was able to.
What is the NSGH?
Nursing Supported Group Home.
Oh.
So Mary left, right?
I think okay. So. I think she had to.
So, okay. So I can do that because if nothing else, if I don't get it by ILC, I can make my own comments. And so just the thing there is to remind myself about the Office of Human Rights, the Access Office of Human Rights Special Assistance. That's just so it went.
Right. And that's specific to people who have been designated seriously mentally ill.
And they
and also, they provide an advocacy for those folks.
Oh, I know them now. I just had to remember their name. Okay. Mm-hmm. So what I wanted out of ILC discussion was, do we want up under 12, do we want more than 3 days worth of meals and snacks? Because last time we talked about Flagstaff and having all that snow and all that other stuff, was 3 days really enough? Any comments?
I'm grateful to see three up there, to tell you the truth.
Well, actually, if you will pass it by, I feel that when they talk about the menus for each group home, I have to reread it to make sure that members get to choose the menus. But I also feel that for kids and teens, that the group home should consider food groups and the appropriate amount of servings per age group.
It does say at least 3 days worth. It says actually maintain at least 3 days. But, that's just a minimum, Eva. So
Eva, the rules, I think the rules do say they do talk about nutritious meals.
Okay.
Yeah. We looked at that when we made the recommendation as well, because we were also talking about that as well.
Well, I was just concerned about group homes for the kids and teens that, you know, macaroni and cheese, you know, without milk.
Right. Chicken nuggets 5 days a week doesn't seem like a great choice. Yeah. And we came up with the 3 days, just so you know, as kind of a compromise, because some areas, again, you know, it's nothing in Phoenix to go shopping every few days, right? But you know, you're right, in some of the rural areas, but most of the agencies know that this is, again, to hold them to a minimum amount, because we have gone to places and then we've had no rules to hold anybody accountable. There's no rule that says you have to have any minimum. So if you have one meal, we weren't able to really, you know, other than to make a recommendation and then just, you know, have them go out and buy more food, we couldn't hold them to any kind of rule. So this gave us some rules to hold vendors accountable for a minimum amount.
Yeah.
So that they weren't running out of food all the time.
Yeah. So
it doesn't come up. It really doesn't come up that often though. It really doesn't.
Well, actually I see a lot of, and maybe in the group homes, what they need to do is, I've seen IRs where the group home does not send a nutritious lunch to the day program.
Yes, we do that. And we get a lot of complaints about food, but what it turns out to be is like they didn't buy enough, like junk food for someone's tastes. Not that there wasn't any food in the home, is that there wasn't any specific food that somebody wanted in the home. And then that is what the complaint ends up being about. But just in general, we very rarely see that there's no food in the home. We mostly find out that it's a complaint more about content of food. You know, like I really wanted there to be Pringles, and instead all there is say a freezer full of food and a cabinet full of food, but it's not the thing I wanted. And so the complaint was made to say there's no food in the house, but it was a generic statement rather than a specific statement, that there was no food.
It was for people in that go to the day program, and the group home does not
send their lunches or send a nutritious lunch or a complete lunch. Yeah, we see that. We do see that quite a bit.
I have seen it quite a bit.
Yeah.
And it's not addressed in this
rule.
In this
rule. That's not addressed in the rule either.
I'll have to remember that.
Anything else, Eva?
No. But okay, just in clarification of Carolyn, the ones that she looked at, she wanted to change the shall to the will. And I want you to know, DD, in all their policies, have the shall and the will. And so if you want the shall and the will, you need to make a special recommendation separate from the rest of the policies that says you want to change the shall to the will and give your thing and vote on that, as opposed to in each one of the things, because every
right
early policy our policies that come through without us commenting on all have shall
right. I think we've talked about this at previous IOC meetings, is that every policy does have the word shall in it.
And so if you want to change it, I think you have to make a specific comment to DD that they need to look at that and not include that with the rest of the stuff that you want to make comments on.
Yeah, I think we as a committee could do that, right, Linda?
You just have to make a motion.
I've gone the round, so I go ahead, Leah, take over for me here.
I really don't feel like I clicked it on and then I went off and then I went on and then I went off. I just feel that you're always welcome to make a recommendation. Please understand that we're following the format that we utilize, following the format that Access utilizes, following the format that we are told from our Attorney General to utilize. And I think there's a lot of passion behind your request, but you understand that you can make it, but it may not make a change.
Right.
Totally agree. And at least it's not May.
That's intentional.
Yes. That's what I have the problem with, is when it says May. That's, shall and will. And if you really want to get down to shall versus will, if you want to make it very consistent, you can put must instead of shall. But I think that given that we're in the state of Arizona, that's how the laws are written. That was going to be part of the discussion that I made during the motion. But I think here in Arizona, I think that we would be better off just leaving it as shall, because that's how everything goes. I've done stuff with the legislature and gone the rounds, but at least it's not May. That's my only, but we can get further into that. Mandy, you had your hand raised.
Muted.
I was having trouble getting the button.
That's
okay. And I just wanted to say that back to the 3 days of food thing is that some, and I know this seems like a hard thing to think about, but some provider agencies like have, you know, like, I know it shouldn't be that way, but they have to wait for their payments to come from the division to do, you know, to do all of the things for the group homes or whatever. And I mean, if we do much more than that, it may become a hardship for some of those agents.
Correct me if I'm wrong, James and Leah, but I think that agencies are supposed to have 3 months worth of cash so that they don't run out of money. I mean, that, I've heard that over the years. So
yes, they are supposed to have be able to run their business for 3 months on their reserves.
Yeah. So not having enough money to go to the grocery store is not a valid point. Okay. Are we ready to have a motion now on this? All right. Carolyn, would you like to make a motion on your items?
Okay, so you might have to help me with this. I make a motion that the committee submits our recommendations to DDD for the following items: the provider chapter, the provider manual chapter 54, group home requirements, 1290 behavioral health advocacy, 6002-G reporting member abuse, neglect, and exploitation, 961 accident and death reporting, and the medical policy manual 310-D2, which is adult routine dental services, and 310-D1, which is emergent dental services for members 21 years of age and older.
Was that both agenda items?
Yeah, that was everything that we discussed.
Okay. All righty. Is there a second?
I second it.
Thank you, Debbie. Do we have discussion? Eva, you're on mute.
So in including in that, she had the shall to the will. And I will not vote for any of it. I wanted it separate, you know, because I'm willing to vote for the dental stuff and the pulpectomy, but I have concerns about some of the other stuff that she put in her motion. And I feel sad that I have to vote no, because, you know, I do not believe in changing the shall to the will, and that is in her motion.
And we can take that out of the motion.
And that's why I would like to take out the dental stuff and voting on the dental stuff separate than the rest.
What other issues do you have on the other items?
Well, you have to, you know, some of her definitions that they both Leah and James talked about, the fact that they're actually access stuff. And so to have it all lumped together like that, I don't like it. I'd rather just, you know, have Jeffrey put up her comments so that we could go line item, and then rather than having her have her policies that she having her whole sheet of paper.
Okay.
A whole sheet of paper is not what I want to vote for.
Okay.
I'm good with that.
Okay, per Robert's rules, do you pull back, how do you word that? Pull back the motion or how do we say that? Jeffrey, do you know?
So you would either do a edit, or you can rescind the motion and then re-motion it.
Okay, rescind. Carolyn, are you willing to rescind your motion?
Yes, I'm happy to rescind my motion so that we can look at things individually.
Do we have a second on that? Eva, thank you. Okay. So for your, so now let's redo the motion and go policy by policy.
So why don't we, since the reason I'm willing to vote for the 310, the one on the dental. Uh-huh. So I'm agreeable to all that since she said she worked on writing stuff. So why don't we vote on that one first before we start getting into the nitpick of the rest of it?
All right. I need a motion.
Okay, so so I make a motion that we review the dental, and now I have to pull it up again.
It's 310, the medical policy manual.
Yeah,
310. Dental.
Medical policy manual. I'm just grabbing it here because I don't remember.
Got it on screen.
Oh, yes. Okay. Medical policy manual 310-D2, Altex adult routine dental services.
And your motion would be that we what?
That we visit, that we review the my recommendations item by item and determine which ones we are going to include in our recommendations.
No.
Sorry.
No. We're going to pass. We're going to pass number five. We're and then we'll review the others.
So basically, can I make the motion? So yes. We're going to, the IOC is going to submit comments on the medical policy manual 310-02, the access adult routine dental services, which
D2.
Would
in, D is in dog. D2, 310-D2.
Oh, that's D2. I'm sorry. I thought that was 02.
I know.
So anyway, so we're going to make comments that to include the definition of emergent services, to include PECTAN.
The comments presented by Carolyn.
PECTAMINI and the other items it listed that on the IOC meeting. So, oh, and then we're going to add these services don't count towards the access Altex $1,000 limit to each one of the services. Line item by line item. Does that cover everything? I can't see anymore, Jeffrey.
I thought we were going to say that we will approve approve and wish to submit the notes that have been prepared and discussed in this committee under medical policy 310-D2. Is that correct? As written.
But it's not as written because we did change
her notes as written.
I know, but we did change when you go down to the bottom, Jeffrey, where she added the down further down down.
That's the end of it.
I thought it's talked about. I thought she had something where I was talking about the limit for 2, 3, and 4, and you decided to put it per line item rather than having that comment at the end. You sure there's not another one?
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Okay, so put numbers on 3, 4, 5, and 7, structure it so that those include not subject to the limit on numbers, letter A, numbers 3, 4, 5, and 7, right?
Right.
Yeah, okay.
And so she has some questions in here, and so the biggest problem is you have it per what she said, it does not include what we discussed. because we were talking about adding pluck.
All right.
What?
All right.
Pulp activities.
Okay, so she did put, she did have that concern subject to the limit. That was a concern because that's number eight. And she wanted that, and we thought that it might be have more clarity if it was added to the ones that that it does not refer to, numbers 3, 4, 5, and 7, rather than as number 8. Correct, Carolyn?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So so the way your motion read was that we are going to accept number 5 in Carolyn's notes as written, with the addition of adding the not subject to the limit on numbers 3, 4, 5, and 7. Correct?
And to define, yeah, because you, and define emergency.
The responsible person?
Yeah.
With the comma missing. Okay. Yeah. Well, she said that. That was in there, so. All right. Do we have a second on this?
I'll second.
You can't second your motion, Eva. Oh,
sorry.
Oh.
No, I'm Carolyn, sorry. You can. Eva was the one that made it, so you can second it.
I second it.
All right. Thank you. All right. We have, do we have further discussion on this? All right. We need to have a verbal vote. Eva?
Yes.
Carolyn?
Yes.
Mandy?
Yes.
James? I mean, not James, I'm sorry. Debbie, sorry.
I don't get a vote.
I know. Yeah. All right, who else are we missing?
We're missing Eduarda.
Eduarda. Is she on the phone still? Well, now we can't vote because we don't. Do we have a quorum?
Yeah, because we have Mandy.
Yep.
So that's, you, that's because you can't vote.
That's right.
So that's 4 out of 5.
No, it's 4 out of 8, and we need 5.
Eduarda is still on. She is on mute.
Okay. Eduarda, we need your vote.
I don't think she can hear us.
Now you what? We can't vote on this because we don't, I can't vote, right? Jeffrey?
At this moment, I believe if it is a half and half, you can make a decision on the beam.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Okay. All right. And I vote yay. All right. Yes. So it's in the affirmative with 1 abstaining, Eduarda abstaining, not voting, no vote. She didn't abstain. She just didn't vote. All right. So that's passed. All right. In the interest of time, everybody, we
can,
still
we vote on the, can we vote on the 3 days that we make a comment to, that IOC makes a comment to on the group home 54 on the 3 days that we approve that?
Yes. Which one is that?
That's the home requirements where they have to have 3 days worth of food, meals, and snacks.
Leah?
I don't think you really need to vote on it because it's already in there. Right. The purpose of the public comment was anything you think we need to change.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I know. I was thinking, what are we? I thought we agreed to that. Okay. You can tell I'm going nuts and time to end this meeting, ladies.
Okay. I'm sorry, but I'm going to have to leave it right now. Okay.
Thanks, Mandy. Appreciate you
because
being on.
I have an appointment that I got to get ready for in like a half an hour or so.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
No worries. Thank you for being here. Just a minute, Eva. Okay. Thank you, Mandy.
Thank
you. Okay, Eva, what's your comment?
We have to go into executive session because I have to have a question for James.
I'm not ending the meeting. I'm just, what I'm going to do is propose that because we have another month to review these items, that Eva, questions with regards to hers, to her comments, I would appreciate it if you would look at her comments and make your recommendations for that. We will meet again next month. And we will finalize this motion and get those in.
Oh, okay. So you're not going to send
them? Yeah, you're getting ready to say something.
Oh.
Okay. All right. So no, because we really don't have time to keep discussing this. I hope that's all right with everybody. We need to get into executive and move on. And I don't know how, would it take long for you to go over what you're questioning on this?
I'm not questioning anything. I wanted to make sure we go into executive session. So
I'm not talking executive right yet. I'm talking these motions.
Okay.
Are those comments going to take you long to do? Because if they do, I would just prefer that you write them and submit them so that the whole committee can look at it.
So
before our next meeting.
So as far as I'm concerned, we passed the dental. We passed my other.
We don't have to do three days.
Oh, I know what you're talking about. Maybe she could send the cultural one so that maybe I can figure out, because, you know, trying to figure out what she was talking about. Because
yes, I'll send those out, Eva.
Thanks.
Didn't we send it out already?
Not the cultural ones. She just sent out the paper sheets.
For some reason you didn't get the other documents that I sent out. So those are ones concerning.
Okay. Can we vote on the ones you sent out? You don't have any comments about those, do you?
Yes, I do.
All right. Then we're done. We're done with this then.
Thanks.
Okay.
I misunderstood what you were talking about.
All right. So Carolyn, you'll send those out. Yep. Send those to me and Jeffrey. And Jeffrey, if you don't mind sending those out to us again. And use Carolyn's curiosity email, not the Outlook one, right, Carolyn?
Actually, if you could just put both in there, both contacts for me. Are you allowed to do that, Jeffrey?
I am. I actually already switched you over to your curiosity Gmail.
Okay. Yeah. If you could include both, that would be great.
Okay. All right.
You're at number 12.
Thank you. Updates from DDD. Go ahead, Leah.
Well, the good news, Linda, is I don't have a lot.
Okay.
But I would like the committee to know that we continue to get very positive feedback about implementing in-person meetings again, not only from our staff, but we're hearing it from our self-advocates and from some advocates and family members. So we're happy about all that. We know that we're still working through some issues for some larger teams about being able to coordinate having some people attend virtually while others are doing in person. And we're running into a few little technology glitches, but we're working through those. So that's going well. I have a piece of really exciting news to share with the committee that for the first time in quite a while, the division has now been released from all notices to cure from the Access Administration. And it's just been a tremendous amount of hard work and a lot of support from Access and being able to successfully resolve those concerns and issues. And we continue to look forward to moving forward and doing some more proactive and positive forward-looking initiatives. So we're excited about that. I have no new updates when it comes to the legislation that proposed adding
spina bifida or Prader-Willi as qualifying diagnoses, and we have not gotten final word whether or not they're going to continue to move or they're done moving, but once we know, we'll be sure to let you know. House Bill 2166, which was the bill that required a new level of licensure for behavioral group homes, did in fact pass and was signed by the governor. So that means the division will be working with the Department of Health Services as they make rules around that new requirement. And we'll be figuring all that out as we go. And as James mentioned earlier, we have been implementing now the legislation that passed last year that was a House Bill 2865 that has the Arizona Center for Disability Law conducting monitoring and investigations around incidents involving members who have complex needs and reside in DDD group homes. They are, at this point, members that are identified as part of this group of folks are residing in approximately 500 separate group homes. But they have started the process, and at the end of the year, we'll be working on our first annual report that'll go back to the legislature regarding incidents that occur in those homes and the information the legislature asked for in that report. So it's a fairly short one today, unless you have any questions.
What about the bill regarding supported decision-making and guardianship?
You know, I heard it was being fast-tracked, and we've seen some, but I haven't heard it's passed, and I haven't heard it's been signed in. Have you heard something different around that?
I've only heard that it's being fast-tracked. I've got Nancy Bartow wants to talk to me today because she's working closely with those guys. And we were against SDM when it went in its original form a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. Not we, the IOC.
I understand. But, mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And totally against the way the guardianship bill was set up mm-hmm. this year. Mm-hmm. But I just was wondering, because I haven't read the final one that's being fast-tracked. Yeah.
We just got our hands on it late last week. We are aware of it. Obviously, we will do what we need to do in the event that it passes and gets signed into law.
Well, I'm anxious to read it.
Me too. I mean, really read it, not just skim it, right?
You're right, right. Okay, I just wondered if you knew anything about that or mm-hmm. what was going on with it. I have nothing further for Leah. Eva? You're on mute.
Did you hear anything about SCR 1012 about the Employment First Disability?
Not that has passed through our legislative review committee that I'm involved with.
Okay, thanks. That was that thing that I forgot last time, and yet you did talk about it.
Okay. So that's any other DDD updates? ADOA, Larry? Are you awake?
Yes, ma'am. I'm still here. One quick update for the committee is our open meeting law training is June 7th. If you don't have the invite, please let me know or Jeffrey know. We'll be happy to get that out to you.
Did that go out a while back?
Yes, I believe it has. If you need me to resend, I'd be happy to. Okay. I will send to everybody in the committee. Okay. I would highly recommend everyone attend if you can. If you can't, that's okay. I will work on getting another training scheduled later in the year.
How long does it last?
Approximately 90 minutes.
Okay.
It'll be a virtual training. And I believe it's set to start at 10 a.m. So it'll go from about 10 to 12:30.
12:30 or 11:30?
Larry, excuse me. Larry, what day did you say that was going to be?
June 7th.
Okay, thank you.
It's 90 minutes? 90
about
minutes?
90 minutes. Yeah, so it'll be 10 to noon. Yeah, noonish, depending on how many Q&A, how long that goes. Because that usually goes a little bit longer because people have a lot of questions. Okay. And come prepared with your questions, little things that that seem to bog you down or you're just not sure on. Maybe during the training, he can get those answered for you. You won't have to ask, but he does a really good job, and I think you'll be pleased with it.
Okay. All righty. Thank you. Anything else, Larry? I know annual report coming up in a couple months.
Yeah, that for the year end, yes. But it's not due. It won't be due for another few months after that. So plenty of time. But yeah, year end ends next month. So.
All righty. Anybody have anything for Larry? Okay, United Healthcare. I think Lori logged off earlier.
She did.
Mercy Care, is she still on?
Mercy Care was never on.
Oh, okay. And PRC, we don't have anybody from PRC. Jeffrey or James, do you have anything for us?
I don't have any updates this time now.
Okay. Ooh. Jeffrey?
I don't have any updates right now for you guys.
Okay. All right. Eva?
Well, actually, I want to ask James, I don't know if this is executive session or what. At one time, you were talking about people had head injuries needing to go to the hospital, and you were calling APS.
Yes, they've been pushing that. Our medical director and Dr. Peterson and Dr. Loki, I believe, addressed APAD about the need for medical follow-up for members who have head injuries, even like relatively, I don't want to say minor head injuries, but anything that might end up with a closed head injury, like to make sure that they have medical follow-up, and for bites, even if the bite doesn't break the skin. And we've been having a lot of feedback from vendors, and those are being addressed by Dr. Decker, Dr. Peterson, and Dr. Loki individually as they come in.
Hey, James and Leah Ball. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Eva. I'm sorry.
I was going to switch topics because I found something else in the closed IRs that APS refused.
If it's specific, then we should wait till the closed session.
And we need to make sure we stick to agenda here. I know we're talking to DDD, but Jeffrey, go ahead.
Yes, you can go ahead, and we are getting low on time.
Yeah.
So I would suggest going to your executive session, then we can go ahead and dismiss those people who have already been on the line.
Okay. Just let me read this one thing. I've been pushing the Depakote. This is for DDD for like update. The Depakote ammonia toxicity testing. And I got this text back. I've been saying it in PRC. I got this text message back. The member saw her psychiatrist today. The psychiatrist was asked about the ammonia toxicity test. He said they do not perform the test. She would need to be admitted to the hospital to have it done, which is not correct. He went into his computer system to write a script for the procedure. It is not in there to do. He said PRC may need to order that test. Please pass on the information. So I know Dr. Decker was very concerned about the ammonia toxicity levels. So, and that is not a level one, according to you, United Healthcare, a level one test, or I don't know exactly what she said, but anyway, so we just need to get the word out. Leah.
Linda, is it at all possible you could summarize what you've been told so we can put that in writing to Dr. Decker? I'm sure he'd be very interested.
I'll email this to you, okay?
Thank you.
All right. Mm-hmm. And to Jeffrey and to Larry. Okay. All right. Do I have a motion to take us out of the public meeting and go into executive?
I make a motion to go into executive session.
Second?
I second it.
Everybody vote.
Aye.
Okay, that's Debbie. Carolyn says aye. Who else is on? Eva? You're on mute. Eva, aye.
She affirmed.
Okay, and I vote. All right, aye. So it's 4 and 1 not. Thank you. 5. We have 5, right?
Yes.
All right. Okay. Thank you, Leah, for being on. Appreciate all the help that you give us. Larry, you can stay on, I believe, if you want.
Okay.
Thank you. Oh, I forgot to thank Joan. I'm sorry. And Frederica. Okay.
Let me switch off the recording.